First of all, I'm not Shang Ping Shu, but I will be. That's okay. No, his name is on here. I will be presenting in place of him today. He's busy teaching right now. I am his grad student, Jake Walczak, from the Department of Geosciences at the University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee. And under the guidance of Shang Ping, we've been doing some research on the transport of antibiotic-resistant Escherichia coli in soil and sediment. Now, the use of, as we know, the use of antibiotics has been increasing over the years, and this, many researchers have documented that this has increased for the selection and the spread of antibiotic-resistant bacteria in the environment. These bacteria have been documented and observed in treated municipal wastewater. Also, the increased use in husbandry animals for veterinary and therapeutic reasons has also increased their levels in animal waste. There's also some researchers that have documented the occurrence of these bacteria in groundwater. Now, some possible pathways for these bacteria to reach the groundwater include use of reclaimed wastewater, leakage from manure storage structures, and also the downward infiltration of water through manure-laden soil. According to Burkholder et al., 2007, 133 million tons approximately of manure in dry weight per year is used as fertilizer and applied to soil. So that is a very large source for these type of bacteria to enter the groundwater. Just some examples that have been done researching the occurrence of these bacteria, Sepkota et al., 2007, they observed some ground, or took some water samples down gradient of a concentrated animal farm operation, and they found erythromycin, tetracycline, and clindamycin-resistant enterococci and E. coli in the groundwater. Similarly, Anderson and Sobey, 2006, found high percentages of resistant E. coli in groundwater in the vicinity of a CAFO. Also, McKeon et al. In 1995 looked at 250 E. coli isolates, or not E. coli, sorry, and found that 100% of coliforms and 87% of non-coliforms were resistant to at least one of the 16 antibiotics examined. Now, seeing as groundwater is the primary source of drinking water in the United States, particularly in the more rural areas, contamination of groundwater with these resistant bacteria poses a direct and a serious health threat. And as these bacteria have been found to occur in both the surface and in the groundwater systems, there's not much research done on how these bacteria are actually transported from one area of the environment to another. So our objective was to examine the mobility of antimicrobial resistant bacteria in the subsurface through some column transport experiments. Now, the first thing we had to do was go out and find some resistant bacteria. So we went to a local dairy farm in Ozaukee County, Wisconsin, and we collected some manure samples from some dairy cows. We separated out 802 E. coli isolates from the manure samples using the modified MTEC agar method, and then we verified that they were indeed E. coli using Simmons citrate agar test. Once we had the isolates verified, we went to test them against different classes of antibiotics. So we chose certain antibiotics as representatives of the different classes of antibiotics, and then we used the Clinical and Laboratory Standards Institute's antibiotic concentrations for susceptibility testing. Now, if we look at ampicillin, for example, we used 8 milligrams per liter of ampicillin to test resistance for a low minimum inhibitory concentration. So if the bacteria isolate did not grow in this low concentration, we considered it susceptible. If it did grow in this low concentration but did not grow in the higher inhibitory concentration, we considered those in between intermediate, and then those that were resistant to the high levels resistant to that antibiotic. So after doing some preliminary tests, column transport experiments, we found that it seemed that tetracycline had the most effect on the mobility characteristics, or tetracycline resistance had the most effect on the mobility of the bacteria. So we chose 4 isolates, 2 that were resistant to tetracycline, and 2 that were susceptible. And then I also have in this table the resistance pattern of those 4 isolates against the other antibiotics. All 4 were resistant to cefamethoxazole, ciprofloxacin, gentamicin, and all 4 were resistant to erythromycin. The tetracycline-resistant isolates were resistant to both ampicillin and cephalothin. However, the susceptible had varied resistance to ampicillin and cephalothin. This is just a little drawing I did to show the column experiment setup. We have a background electrolyte solution. We pumped about 72 pore volumes of background electrolyte solution into saturated columns filled with sand that was diameter ranging 354 micron to 420. This is ultra clean sand and it's uniformly packed. After equilibrating the columns, we injected a known concentrated solution of bacteria, and then we measured the effluent using a spectrophotometer. This is an example of our results. We have over on the left the normalized breakthrough concentration, and on the bottom we have the pore volumes. This was done at 3 millimolar KCl electrolyte solution, and if we look at the data, the red data points represent the 2 resistant isolates, and the 2 blue data points represent the susceptible isolates. And we can see from this graph the average breakthrough for the resistant bacteria was much greater than that for the tetracycline susceptible bacteria. And this was the average breakthrough for the resistant was about 60%, as the susceptible was only about 15% at 3 millimolar concentration. Now, we also did some column experiments at 10 millimolar electrolyte solution, and you can see the same is true. The resistant bacteria had greater breakthrough concentrations than that of the susceptible bacteria. However, both of the peak breakthroughs decreased because of the increased ionic strength. So because of the compression of the electrostatic layer surrounding the grains, this allows closer approach of the bacteria to the grains, and then allows more attachment and less mobility. So first I'd just like to tell you a little bit about tetracycline and then the mechanisms for the resistance. So tetracycline works by inhibiting the bacterial protein synthesis by disrupting the interaction of aminoalkyl tRNA with the ribosome. So it basically does not let the bacteria form proteins, and then it can't reproduce. There's 3 mechanisms for tetracycline resistance. Ribosomal protection. This is where within the cell, the bacteria uses some chemical to decrease the affinity of tetracycline for its intended target. So then it leaves tetracycline inactive within the cell. Then it can also modify the antibiotic itself through enzymes, and this leaves the antibiotic tetracycline to become unstable within the cell, and then it inactivates the tetracycline. The third most common and most efficient mechanism for tetracycline resistance is efflux pump. Now, what efflux pump is a pump made of, or for this example, it's made of three parts, arc A, arc B, and toll C proteins that span from the cytoplasm in the cell, and the toll C actually extends out into the external environment. So the reason this is important is because if these bacteria have this toll C protein extending into the outer environment, many of us who study the transport of bacteria in the subsurface know that their mobility is very much affected by its surface. So, and it also has been documented that bacteria that do not contain this toll C protein often do not have very high resistance to tetracycline. So the ones that we're using in this experiment do have that high resistance, so it's very likely they might contain this toll C protein that extends out into the environment. We also want to characterize the cell surface properties of the bacterial cells, and we use the zeta potential. The resistant bacteria had a zeta potential, or the first resistant bacteria isolate had a zeta potential of 7, and it decreased to about -2 with the increased ionic strength, which is what is expected, that this would decrease and destabilize the bacteria within the solution, causing more attachment. However, if we compare one of these resistant isolates to the susceptible isolate, we can see that the magnitude of the susceptible isolate's zeta potential is much greater. So that means the susceptible should be more stable in solution and be more mobile, but from our column experiments, we see that the opposite is true. The resistant are actually more mobile. So maybe zeta potential is kind of too general to give us a good idea about the surface characteristics and hence the mobility of our bacterial isolates. We also looked at the hydrophobicity of the bacterial cells, and hydrophobicity was measured as the fraction of the bacterial cells partitioned to dodecane after participating between dodecane and KCl. Again, the resistant bacteria, they had a higher hydrophobicity than the susceptible bacteria, which we would expect because the more hydrophobic bacteria would be more mobile in the subsurface. So they wouldn't attach to the hydrophilic quartz grain. However, as we increased the ionic strength, we saw an increase in hydrophobicity. And if we remember back to the breakthrough curves, there was less or more attachment with the increased ionic strength. However, with the hydrophobicity increasing, it would tell us that there'd be less mobility, the hydrophobicity for the bacteria in the resistant was much higher than the susceptible, For the total 802 isolates we collected, I just wanted to give you an idea of the total resistance pattern for the antibiotics. For ampicillin, we saw that 59.1% were resistant, intermediately resistant to ampicillin. For cefalothin, it's almost 100% were intermediately resistant, and 72.7% had a high resistance to cefalothin. Tetracycline, 25.1% intermediate, 13.1% high resistance. And erythromycin, 98.9% were intermediate, and 80.5% were very high. So this just shows us how many of those bacteria have very high resistances to the different antibiotics. We calculated the approximate bacterial load based on how many cows were on the dairy farm and how many kilograms per day of what manure they produce. And it turns out that about 5.2 times 10 to the 8th per meter squared per day of viable E. coli are being spread onto the land. And if they have these high resistances, that can be a very large health problem. This is just a table showing us how many of these antibiotics were sold. This is the antibiotic market in 1995. I know this is a decade old, but these numbers I could only imagine increased with the increased globalization and increased access to antibiotics. So cephalothin, as you can remember back to the last slide, had like 80% roughly high resistance, and $8,446 million worth of this antibiotic were sold. And ampicillin had about a 50% intermediate resistance of 802 isolates, and it kind of corresponds to this $4,413 million of this antibiotic sold. Now, bacteria can vary in their surface properties from source to source. So we want to see if this tetracycline resistance had any similar mobility characteristics to E. coli from a different source. So we went to Bradford Beach in Milwaukee, Wisconsin, located on Lake Michigan, and took some water samples. These water samples are directly affected by wastewater. And we took some samples, and they had similar resistance characteristics to those that we chose for the manure isolate column experiments. So we sent those through some saturated columns, and we saw, again, the ones that were resistant to tetracycline had a much higher breakthrough than those that were susceptible in both 3 millimolar KCl and 10 millimolar KCl. Then we did a preliminary experiment using unsaturated columns, and we found the same thing. The resistant tetracycline-resistant bacteria had a higher mobility than the susceptible bacteria. We did this during steady state conditions at 21% moisture content. And you can see that both breakthrough curves dropped in their normalized breakthrough very significantly when we included the air-water interface into those unsaturated columns. So there's a lot of attachment there. Conclusions, tetracycline-resistant E. coli are more mobile in both saturated and potentially in partially saturated subsurface materials. We hypothesize that the efflux pumps can alter cell surface properties and subsequently transport behavior in the subsurface system. And more research is warranted. The thing we would like to do is to actually locate those TOLSI ARC AB efflux pumps on our E. coli isolates with some protein analysis, and also look at the sugars and other proteins on the surface of the bacteria and relate that back to the transport.
We don't have questions, so
please.
You may want to consider looking at Oshima theory to look at the macromolecule thickness.
Okay.
That's changed.
Thank you.